This episode is brought to you by Discover South Carolina. Learn more at discoversouthcarolina.com. This week on Meat and Three, we're turning an eye to food at its trickiest, from imitation olive oil to the pretensions of 3D printers.
We were just doing like a birthday party for one of the employees, and we printed a steak just for fun.
You know, a grape Jolly Rancher isn't going to satisfy your craving for grapes. So, I mean, in a sense, it kind of multiplies the sensory qualities that we can love in the world.
So basically, you culture the cell in a bioreactor, it grows, and then ultimately, at the end, you come out with a piece of meat.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. I'm Kat Johnson, HRN's Communications Director, and I am here this week with my co-host and colleague, Katie Mosman-Wadler, our Executive Director. Hi, Katie.
Hey, Kat. Happy, what day is it? It's Thursday.
It's Thursday. We maybe aren't recording this on a Thursday, but, you know, today is Thursday when this show is coming out.
As you know, 5 o'clock somewhere. And Bushwick exactly. is somewhere, and we wish we were all together there with our very special guests today.
Exactly. So last week, you know, we had part one of this special two-part episode featuring chefs from South Carolina. We had Raffaele Dell'Erta and Jason Tufts, and they're chefs that are kind of more in the upstate region. And this week, we're coming back down to the coast. We've got two chefs from Charleston and Myrtle Beach. But really quick, I want to remind you, if you haven't, you didn't listen to the last episode, a little bit of context here. So we're doing this in partnership with Discover South Carolina and Charleston Wine and Food. And for the past 5 years, you know, we've been partnering with Charleston Wine and Food for a really long time, and usually pop up there in person to do some recordings. And another longstanding tradition at the festival is that Discover South Carolina presents the opening night. And that is really one of the main features of local and regional chefs. And it shines a spotlight on South Carolina's Chef Ambassador Program. So this week we have two of the other South Carolina Chef Ambassadors, and I'm going to introduce them now, our special guests. First up, we have Kevin Mitchell, who is the chef instructor at the Culinary Institute of Charleston. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
So good. I wish we were in person like we normally are at the festival, but nonetheless, so good to have you here. Our second guest is new to the HRN. We're so excited to have her. Please welcome Jamie Descalis, the chef and owner of Johnny D's Waffles and Bakery in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Welcome, Jamie.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited. Thank you.
I mean, Jamie, I have to say, looking at your website today and the incredible menu and imaginative waffles that you're making, I need to plan a trip to Myrtle Beach soon.
Oh, yeah, you definitely got to come see us. I'll make you some good stuff over there. We just finished spring break, so it's been a little bit of a crazy time down here. But now it seems like it's settling down a little bit until we get hit again during the summer. So we're just recouping.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear more from both of you. You're both in, you know, tourist hotspots in South Carolina. So I'm sure you have a lot of interesting news to share with us about, you know, what is sort of going on with recovery from COVID and things starting to really pick back up in your towns. But really quick, we have a very quick announcement. If Katie, you want to jump in on that.
Yeah, so absolutely. Normally, if you're an HRN Happy Hour listener, you know that this is when we go through all kinds of highlights of what's been happening on the network. We're going to take the second today just to tell you, as you've probably heard from your favorite shows, we are officially going on our spring season break, not the same spring break that Jamie is recovering from, but we take a season break and get all our ducks in a row and do our planning for our summer season. So you might notice some of your favorite shows are not going to be posting new episodes. episodes for the next couple of weeks, but never fear, we will be back with a full schedule on May 3rd. And in the meantime, there will definitely be a trickle because our hosts love nothing more than to break out of the mold of a set schedule. So you'll hear from us. It might not be the same pace, but this is a great chance for you to go to our website if you haven't already and sign up for our newsletter. It is on the bottom right corner. It says sign up. And that's a great way to hear about what's coming out, particularly to learn about some new shows we have coming up and keep an eye out for some very cool events that we'll be announcing tickets for soon. Hint is if you're thirsty, just keep an eye on that HRN newsletter. So that's it for our announcements for this week. And we're going to just dive right in to speaking more with Kevin and Jamie.
Yes. Oh, man. This is one of the drawbacks of recording a show in advance is that I know when the show drops, we're going to have lots of event announcements ready. So maybe we'll drop them in the show notes for people so you can be kind of the first to know. But yes.
Good thinking, Kat.
Yeah. So, well, before we started recording, Kevin and Jamie, you both mentioned something that I think ties in nicely to what we talked about with Raffaele and Jason. We talked a little bit about culinary school and kind of like what that the trajectory that that set their careers on. And you have something in common. You both are CIA grads. So
yep.
I wanted to hear a little bit about that and kind of how that started your culinary careers.
Well, Kevin, why don't you go first? You graduated first, so.
Yeah, well, I graduated with my associate's degree in culinary in 1991 and was fortunate enough to go back in 94 and get my bachelor's degree from the CIA in 96. And, you know, it definitely was a great experience for me to go to culinary school. I started working in restaurants when I was 16, and I had worked in this one restaurant back home in New Jersey and for 3 years. And at the end of the third year, I was being promoted to the sous chef. And at that point, I decided, you know, I needed a more formal education. And fortunately, the chef that I was working with was a CIA grad as well. And it was really cool. He actually planned a cool little trip for us to go to CIA. However, I didn't know that he was planning this. So what he did was he put me on the schedule to work one day to work a lunch shift. So I come in like I would normally do. And, you know, I go and change and I put my uniform on and I come downstairs and I'm going to my station. They start getting set up and he's standing there. He's like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm on the schedule. Like, I'm going to set up and it's, you know, we got to get ready for lunch. And he's like, no, go back upstairs and put your clothes back on and meet me downstairs when you're done. And what I didn't know was he had planned to drive me to CIA, to the campus, to take me on a tour. And he had worked it out with my mom. So we got in the car and we made the 3-hour trek up to Hyde Park, New York. And we walked around the campus and, you know, I applied to school that day. And, you know, about maybe a month or so later, I was working in the restaurant and I got a call from my mom and my mom said, hey, you got this really big packet from CIA. And she's like, can I open it? So I was like, well, yeah, go ahead. And in there, it basically was my acceptance letter. And I started in, you know, in April of 91. And I went through the first 2 years and got my AOS in, you know, in 89 when I went and I got my AOS in 91. And came home and actually took the sous chef position at the same restaurant where I was working at before and worked there for 3 years and decided that I did not decide. My mom decided that I was going to go back to get my bachelor's degree. And honestly, at that particular time, I wasn't really thinking about going back to school. I was a sous chef. I was, you know, making fairly decent money for a 21-year-old. But she felt it necessary for me to go back to get the bachelor's degree. And, you know, it was one of the best decisions of my life because it's opened up so many doors to all the things that I've done since since getting that degree, specifically coming to Charleston, becoming, you know, the first African-American chef instructor at the Culinary Institute of Charleston, having the opportunity to go to the University of Mississippi in 2016 and get my master's degree in 2018. And of course, you know, opening up this door to where we are now, as far as, you know, Jamie and I being, you know, South Carolina chef ambassadors. And we have the dubious distinction of being the only class that has done it 2 years in a row. And that's basically definitely because of, you know, when we first were designated chef ambassadors, COVID hit and pretty much shut down the program as much as far as travel. So we still were kind of maintaining doing some social media blurbs here and there. And I think at the end of the year, you know, they decided, well, hey, these guys really didn't do much travel, much of the responsibilities of being a chef ambassador. So they asked us to serve another full year. And here we are serving another full year until, you know, our term ends at the end of 2021.
Yeah, they wanted to get a little bit more work out of you guys.
Yeah, we got gypped last year. So,
well, we feel lucky to have this second go around and hopefully be able to, you know, get to taste some food as part of this program too. And Kevin, you're known as the chef scholar. And can you talk about, like, did your beginning sort of in your research at the CIA, did that channel into that eventual title that you've taken on?
Well, I think, no, more or less going to the University of Mississippi was kind of the catalyst that channeled into that particular moniker that I use, because I looked at the fact that, you know, I'd been, or I still am, a chef and had been doing this for so many years, and taking that break for 2 years to move to Mississippi and pack up my life and all my furniture and everything and leave it in storage and, you know, live, you know, about 10 hours away from Charleston and become a student in a graduate program. And it was funny, a lot of my students, when, you know, I was explaining to them what I was doing, they thought I was crazy. They're like, well, chef, like, you're going to be gone for 2 years and then you're going to sit in a classroom and not cook professionally for 2 years. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what the graduate program is. And I decided to create that Instagram page, with the name Chef Scholar, as a way to have my students kind of follow me on my journey for those 2 years. And so a lot of things that I did while I was there, a lot of the classes that I was taking and a lot of the papers and things that I was writing, I would post on that page. And I just figured, you know, basically I'm a chef. And at that particular point in my mind, I was becoming a scholar. And I just said, you know, I just brought the two kind of professions together, and there you have it. And it was a great experience for my students to kind of see exactly what I was doing, and not from kind of a cooking point of view, even though, I mean, I did cook. I mean, I cooked pretty much for myself, and I did cook for my classmates, which came in handy when I needed papers typed or if I needed papers to be edited. Yeah. There was a really cool barter system that we had where I'd be like, hey, you know, I made this really big pot of gumbo this weekend. I can give you some, but hey, can you look through this paper and make sure it sounds good? And, you know, it went over really well. And, you know, I was known for coming to class with, you know, five or six Rubbermaid containers with whether it was gumbo or jambalaya or anything that I had cooked over the weekend for my classmates. And, you know, they benefited it from it just as much as I did.
And Jamie, can you talk about your start at the CIA and what sort of drove you to go to culinary school?
I grew up literally in my dad's restaurants. He moved to America when he was 16, bought his first restaurant when he was 19 in New Jersey called the Hills Diner. And then I think at 19 or 20, he married my mom, and then they moved to Middletown, New York, and we settled there for a while. And then after I was born, the two of them were working. At first, I was the second one, my older brother, Nick. But me and Nick spent so much time in the restaurants, like in the back office, behind the registers. So naturally, you know, as we grew up, and I think I started working when I was 13. And when it was time to go to college, I obviously wanted to, you know, stay in the food business. And my brother had just graduated a year or two before me, 2 years maybe before me, from the Culinary Institute of America for a culinary degree. So I went for baking and pastry, which I don't love baking or making pastries, I'm going to be honest with you. But I do, it has come in handy because at the restaurant with the breakfast, like we do a lot of batters, we do breads, we do cakes and, you know, pound cake, banana bread and stuff. So it has actually worked out well for me. I think that I'm more successful in the breakfast business with my baking degree than if I would have had a culinary degree and having to learn how to bake, because baking is a little bit different, more precise. So I'm glad I got that education, because some of the chef instructors really taught, you know, really did a great job teaching us about things. So I was able to carry that over into the breakfast business. But I remember when I decided I wanted to go, my dad was in the kitchen making spanakopita, and I was trying to decide what I wanted to do, if I was going to go like hospitality or if I was going to go to culinary school. And when I saw him making that, I don't know, that day I was like, I'm going to just go to culinary school. That's where I belong. So that's how I ended up there. So it was 21 months. I did an internship at a huge bakery in Kingston, New York for 16 weeks. And then so you like go to school for a certain amount of time, do your internship, and then you go back to school and then you graduate. And as soon as I graduated, my dad put me to work at one of his four restaurants we had in New York at the time.
And Jamie, I was reading a bit of your inner Q&A on the Discover South Carolina page. And I was really struck by one of the things that you had to kind of learn about when you moved south was cooking grits, because like you said, you have a breakfast restaurant and in the South, people want their grits. So I'd like to hear about that. And just also, you know, those first, you know, year or two being in the South and kind of what you had to adapt to in a culinary sense.
Well, when I was in New York, every once in a while, someone would come in and be like, do you have grits? And I'm like, no, we don't. That's not really a thing. Like, I don't think any of the diners had grits. I don't think any of them. There was like a couple restaurants that were, smaller scale restaurants that, you know, would serve grits, but none of the diners did. And all the Greeks up there, all the Greeks and Albanians in New York, New Jersey, they own diners. That's what they do up there. So nobody made grits. So when I came down here, we took over a Nibbles family restaurant. And we turned it into Johnny D's, but we kind of, a couple of things that like we, you know, the grits and stuff, I kind of was just like, I tasted his grits and I was like, I really don't, they were instant grits that he was cooking. And I was like, I really don't see what the fascination is with this. And then I picked up a bag of grits from the store, I think Palmetto grits from, you know, one of the local South Carolina grits from the store. And I made them at home with some heavy cream and a lot of butter. And I was like, oh, I'm like, these are good. So then I went back to the restaurant and I was like, Daddy, we have to stop serving these. We need to get stone ground grits. And I started using it from Allen Brothers, you know, Adlu in Columbia. And I made them for him. And he's like, oh, him too. He was like, oh, now I see. Now I see. Because he was the same way. Like, I don't really understand what the fuss is about. Because, you know, we didn't taste them the way, you know, they were intended to be tasted. So, but yeah, there was like a couple different things like sausage gravy. You know, we didn't use that. We didn't have that in New York. We just had brown gravy and we smothered that on everything up there, French fries to beef to whatever. So, and then some other things that are popular for breakfast that, we don't serve them at our restaurant, because I feel like we specialize in some other things, that maybe, you know, some, I don't want to say designer type breakfasts, but just some other kinds of breakfast dishes that no one else really serves down here. So I leave some of the other Southern classics, like shrimp and grits. I don't serve them in my restaurant. People do. That's a big thing for brunch, or chip beef. We don't serve that either. I feel like our menu has enough to where, you know, some of those Southern classics, I don't want to just reinvent the wheel again. Like, I want to give the customer something else. There's plenty of places in Myrtle Beach that can go get shrimp and grits, but you know, my homemade pound cake, French toast, or my red velvet waffles, that's all you want that, you come into my store to get it. So that's some of the stuff I've kind of, and even like our home fries, like we kept them the way we were doing them in New York. And you know, some people, a lot of customers love them. And once in a while I get a customer that's like, it's not what I'm used to. And it's no problem. You know, you can't please everyone's palate. So some stuff we have adapted and stuff we just stayed strong and we just did what we always did with it because it worked. And people, and down here in Myrtle Beach, there's so many transplants that it's not like, you know, it's all people like come in there and looking for some of that stuff that, you know, we used to serve in New York and they're happy that it's available. So it works out for everyone, I think.
Definitely. I mean, gosh, your menu just makes me so hungry. And I also just like love breakfast for dinner. So I'm sure that mm-hmm. people are love to eat your food any time of day. Well, I like where this conversation's heading. I want to talk a lot more about more of these South Carolina ingredients and produce and foods that you are both using on menus and, you know, working with and really celebrating. So let's take a really quick break and we'll come back and talk more about the food of South Carolina. This episode is brought to you by Discover South Carolina. Learn about South Carolina's culinary scene from the people who know it best, its chef ambassadors. The South Carolina Chef Ambassador Program seeks chefs who embody the best of South Carolina's food scene, both in the quality of their ingredients and their devotion to playing an active role in their communities. South Carolina's chef ambassadors are true culinary leaders. The program aspires to elevate visitor awareness of the state's diverse culinary talent, abundant produce, and numerous tourism locales found on and off the beaten path. Learn more at discoversouthcarolina.com. Okay, we are back with two of South Carolina's chef ambassadors, Kevin Mitchell and Jamie Descalis. So we were talking a little bit before the break, Jamie, about some of the ingredients that, you know, you've discovered in South Carolina that you really love to work with. So, you know, real locally grown grits as opposed to the quick grits, mm-hmm. instant grits. I am curious to hear from both of you about, you know, especially as we're entering spring and summer and there's such an abundance of great food grown in the state. What are some ingredients that you're really looking forward to working with right now? Jamie, if you want to start.
We sell a lot of strawberries at the restaurant. So usually around this time I can start getting them, you know, more locally, and the same thing with blueberries. So you can always tell this time of year, cause, we have to have strawberries all year round being a breakfast place. So, you know, they come from all over the place, you know, in the off season, but this time of year that you can tell as soon as they start coming in locally, you know, they're fresh, they're brighter in color. They taste great. They last longer cause they didn't have to travel as far. And we usually A&A produce that we use here locally. They get a lot of local stuff that we can get through them, or if I can get it from a local farm and work with them to have it delivered or picked up, you know, I'll do that too. We at my restaurant, we use some different local proteins too, and stuff like that, and honey and the flour from Adloo as well. So. You know, as far as produce and stuff, we get, we started getting lettuce from Micro Leon Farms in Conway. It's a super sweet family that runs that little farm. It's pretty new and I use all my microgreens from him. And, anytime I have an event, I, you know, call him up and he gets me, I just love his microgreens. They last a lot longer. You can tell that they're super fresh. He puts some baby beet greens in there. So I get some that beautiful purple color when I put them on the plates because everyone wants to put everything on Instagram now. So when I make my dishes, I want to make sure that there's some color to them so they look beautiful when people post them. So that's actually pretty awesome that he delivers them once a week. And it's just nice. And as we go here, I keep trying. If anyone approaches me, like a local farmer, and is like, hey, you know, I have this product, I always see what I can do, you know, let's see if I can bring them in. And that's what the guy from Micro Leon Farms did. His name is Oscar. He just stopped in one day and was like, chef, I have these samples here. He's like, can you please consider, you know, letting us bring you some microgreens? And they're awesome. I love them. I think that they taste great. They add a little, and he'll make like special blends for me where, you know, if you get it from somewhere across, you know, from who knows where, you know, you might not be able to get that same courtesy, but he was like, what do you want in your microgreens? So there's like some baby basil in there, the beetroot and like a little baby arugula and stuff. So it really adds a nice flavor and texture to the dishes. And, but it's been nice learning all that South Carolina has to offer. I didn't realize beforehand, like what South Carolina had to offer like this. And it's been super awesome to be like, oh, we can get that here too. Like, oh, that's made here too. Oh, that's produced here too. And we just brought in liquor from 1233 Distillery up in Little River. So now that's the only vodka and whiskey I use in the restaurant for our bar. And we also brought in Sally's Greatest for jams and syrups for the liquor drinks. And people really like those. So we sell a lot of mimosas. So it's been pretty awesome. And I love partnering with anyone local, you know, because, you know, I post their stuff on Instagram. We kind of like help market each other and everything like that. And you don't get that with like a big company, like, you know, when you're trying to, you know, help market each other and stuff, just a big company just doesn't do that. Like the little, you know, us little guys. So I like to support the local when I can.
Jamie, this is Katie. I wanted to ask you, I feel like I've learned so much about you from your website and looking at your menus, like Kat said, made me extremely hungry. But you also have a page dedicated to autism awareness, and April is Autism Awareness Month. And you mentioned on there that your son has been diagnosed with autism and had some eating struggles. And I was just wondering if he has any kind of... has had any culinary discoveries of his own with South Carolina ingredients or any kind of delicious things that he's been able to love that are kind of unique to your location.
Oh my God. He loves blueberries. So this time of year, especially, I always go to the farmer's market and I pick him up like, you know, they have those little green baskets over there. So I pick him up, you know, when I go a thing of blueberry, he eats them by the I can give him a 5-pound gallon of blueberries and I don't think he would stop until he got to the bottom of it. He just loves them. And that's one of the first things we got him to eat at feeding therapy. And it was a huge struggle to where like he would take 2 hours to eat 5 blueberries. I would have to cut them in 4. He had such feeding troubles when we first started. And now the fact that he loves blueberries so much, it really makes me happy. And we eat a lot of WK Price Farm beef. Because we get it, you know, she brings it to the restaurant. We have her burgers there. So every once in a while, I'm like, bring me a brisket. Bring me, you know, some sirloin steaks because James loves them. So I cook them up. You know, I cook him a steak and then he eats it for like 2 days and has it for lunch. And he just loves it so much. And I just get really excited now because, you know, if I go to a local farmer's market now and I want to cook something for him, he'll pretty much eat anything I put on a plate for him as long as it doesn't have any like too mushy of a texture. And obviously if it tastes good, because, you know, he has standards. So,
well, yeah,
it's been pretty awesome. he won't eat it if it doesn't taste good or if it's mushy, and I don't like mushy things either. So I don't know if he got that from me or is his own personal taste, but, but he really, as far as the South Carolina ingredients that I have available that he eats, blueberries and the beef that we get is probably the two biggest things that he devours. So I'm actually, and I have two blueberry bushes in the backyard that are almost like, I think they're another week and a half away from being able to pick the blueberries. I can't wait to pick them all with him and he can eat them all. I'm so excited.
Oh, nice. And Kevin, I want to ask you kind of the similar question of, you know, what South Carolina ingredients are are some of your favorites or that you're really excited about seasonally? But in particular, I would love for you to also talk about the book that you're working on or, you know, have completed with David Shields and how that ties into, you know, ingredients and foods of South Carolina.
Yeah, well, you know, we have the luxury at the culinary school to bring in a lot of, you know, local South Carolina grown products through, you know, a few of our classes where we really try to get the students to understand, you know, the chef and the farmer relationship or the, you know, the chef and the producer relationship. So, I mean, right about now, me personally, you know, for the spring, you know, Jamie mentioned strawberries. So I'm looking forward to, you know, to getting some really good strawberries from McLeod Farms who does the really great peaches, the Max Pride peaches, which should be coming in pretty soon. But I definitely like to use a lot of, you know, South Carolina grown grains and beans and peas. So, you know, I work with, you know, I do a lot of work with Anson Mills to get the, you know, of course, the Carolina Gold rice and the Sea Island red peas. I'm a huge fan of the Benet seeds, so I use those a lot. I'm looking forward to hopefully next week actually getting some asparagus from Moneta Farms in Moneta, South Carolina. I'm also very much into using a lot of microgreens, whether it's in the class or even at home. So getting that stuff from City Roots or Vertical Roots is a really big deal for me. And, you know, we through the school and also personally, we work with Grow Carolina, who basically is a warehouse for a lot of these products that come into the area of Charleston, but all these products are coming in from different areas throughout the state, whether it's Johns Island, whether it's Moneta, South Carolina, whether it's Saluda, whether it's Charleston, it's Monk's Corner, so on and so forth. So it's a really great time of the year for you know, produce things, other things I like to use, you know, as far as, you know, I'll use Charleston Spice Company spices. I actually have some stuff that was gifted to me by Jamie. And I like to use a lot of her spices that she has. So, you know, South Carolina is just a great place to get a lot of really great products. You know, we also get some beef from the same place that Jamie does. We'll get our hogs for our butchery charcuterie class that are produced right here in South Carolina. You know, we'll use Keegan Fillion Farms chicken, so on and so forth. A lot of our seafood, depending on the class, will come, you know, from Abundant, and they definitely bring us a lot of local, whether it's swordfish or grouper or, you know, trigger fish, things like that. So it's, once again, it's just so, so exciting. I think spring is like the best time of year for produce, for products, specifically produce, because there's so many things that are coming out and so many people reaching out to myself and reaching out to Jamie to, you know, to introduce us to their products, to their produce. You know, people like Nat Bradford with his, if you've ever had any of his collard greens, I mean, they're fantastic. And I know soon he's going to have okra coming through, and it's just awesome. And then as you talk about the book, it is due out in August. I believe it's in print right now, and it's called Taste the State: South Carolina Signature Foods, Recipes, and Their Stories. So in this book, David and I basically write about South Carolina foods or products, things that are directly connected to South Carolina. So it could be a product. It could be also a dish. So we write about Jamie mentioned shrimp and grits. So we have an entry about shrimp and grits. And if you look at the book, almost like a dictionary where – we have entries and everything is listed in alphabetical order. And each entry is, you know, average 2 to 3 pages long. Some are a little bit longer than that based on what they are. And then there's some stories. So some really interesting stories about the history of a dish or the history of these ingredients and where they come from and who first cultivated them and how they make their way to South Carolina. Also, once again, recipes. The recipes, we offer recipes, truly like classic recipes from the 1700s and 1800s. And also, of course, you know, me being the chef, I actually write some recipes that are a little bit more contemporary. And so what we're trying to do in the book is show people kind of the evolution of recipes for certain dishes. So, you know, whether it's okra soup, and we write, you know, we offer a recipe that comes from the Virginia Housewife cookbook. And then there's recipes that are a little bit more updated and a little bit more contemporary that maybe change some ingredients around or change some cooking techniques around. And then, you know, we offer, you know, people the opportunity to take this book and take it home and hopefully want to try to, you know, to duplicate some of the recipes. And we write the book in a fashion where it's not like too technical, it's not too academic. It's a little bit of a mixture of both. You know, anyone that knows David Shields, David is extremely academic, if I can say so. And you know, and then of course he teams up with me, the chef, so we were able to kind of balance each other as far as our writings and how we actually wrote the book. We, you know, there was a list that he put together of things that he wanted to cover in the book. And then basically we looked at the list and he said, okay, Kevin, you choose the entries that you're really excited to write about. I'll choose the ones that I want to write about. And basically we that's how we kind of tag team the book. And I would write my entry and I would email it to him and he would look through it. He would offer some suggestions and I would do the same thing for him. So he would write an entry, he would email it to me. And then once we felt like the entry was good to go, we put it in a file, in a Dropbox file. And that's how we kind of created the manuscript. And we turned the manuscript in and there's some really beautiful photos in the book. There's some stock photos that David had of his own. And then, you know, there were some other photos of food that the press wanted. And we were doing this right in the middle of the pandemic. And we had money put aside for a photographer to, you know, shoot some photos, you know, whether it was going out to an okra field or, you know, a rice field or whatever and shooting some photos. But of course, you know, the pandemic kind of, you know, put a kibosh on that. So the press was like, well, Kevin, you're a chef, you can cook the food at home and you can take pictures. And I'm like, well, I have a camera phone and, you know, and Jamie's going to probably call me out on this, but a lot of the photos that I post on my Instagram are not photos that I have personally taken. There are photos of, you know, my partner Rhonda, who has a really great camera phone. Of course, her camera phone is much better than mine, of course. And the editor one day said, you know, you post these really great pictures on your Instagram. I think we can use those for this book. And I was like, well, they're from a phone. She's like, but if you send us the photo, our art department can, you know, look at the photo and make, you know, see if it's going to be, you know, a viable picture to use for the book. And if it is, great. If not, you know, we'll work around it. And so they gave me a list of specific dishes that they wanted me to cook. And then I cooked the food. And then Rhonda would prop the food and take the photos. And then we would send the photos to the press and they would approve or disapprove, you know, based on, you know, the pixels and the JPEG and all that other stuff that I really don't know about. I just say, hey, it's a nice picture. It's a picture of frog bar stew. It looks beautiful. Okay, that's great. Let's put it in the book. And so we were able to do that and have her, you know, shoot those photos. And, you know, the press was very gracious, you know, to allow for her to get, you know, photo cred for the photos that she shot here in our home on her phone. So it's going to be a great book. I talked to the publisher the other day. There's a lot of buzz around the book. It is available for pre-sale right now. It does drop in August. And if you want to pre-order the book, you just go to the uscpress.com and then type in Taste the State and you can have it pre-ordered. I believe the release date will be the last day of August. However, if you pre-order it, you'll get it. I believe you'll get it 2 or 3 weeks prior to that, just for pre-ordering the book. So it's, you know, it's going to be great. We have a couple of signings or book signing schedule, and it's going to be really interesting because the week that the book drops, David is going to be leaving the state for about a year. He's going to be on sabbatical and taking I believe a teaching position in California. So the day after our first signing, which we're doing on August 26th at Middleton Place here in you know, the Charleston area, the next day he's loading up his car and he's driving off to California and is going to be gone and won't be back until like mid, you know, 2022. So a lot of the book signings, whether they're in live or via, you know, Zoom or, you know, other online, you know, ways of doing it, will be on me, which is, you know, which is great, you know. And I'm really, you know, honored and excited to be a part of this project with David. You know, a lot of people know that David and I, our relationship started back in 2014 when we were playing in that Fuller dinner, and we've done many other projects since then. And it was his idea that we do this book together, because he was actually approached by the press with the initial project of him writing a book. And it was based on kind of like, hey, we want you to write this book about like the top 15 dishes of South Carolina. And knowing David, he didn't want to do that. He wanted to do something that was a little bit more comprehensive. And he said, well, this is what I propose we do for this project, and I want to have Kevin Mitchell be a part of this. So it's a huge honor for him to even, you know, consider me being a part of this project. So I'm excited. Look for it in, you know, at the end of August, and look for some events around the release of the book.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Well, we're close to the end of our time, but one thing I asked Raffaele and Jason that I also wanted to ask both of you is, you know, as we kind of get back to the quote unquote new normal, and particularly the two of you are in tourist destinations and food destinations, and, you know, Jamie, you mentioned you're already welcoming back crowds of visitors, mm-hmm. and you've been really busy. And so I'm curious to hear from you. As people do start coming back to visit South Carolina and to eat the food of the state and eat, you know, all the wonderful ingredients that we just talked about, what do you hope people come away? What sort of experience or knowledge do you hope they come away from South Carolina with?
I just want people to, you know, the word to get out that there's a lot of great food scene things happening here in South Carolina, from new restaurants opening up in the Myrtle Beach area. And I'm not even talking, I'm not talking about franchises and stuff. I'm like, people are really investing money and time and energy and talent in some of these new restaurants that are opening up. I feel that since I've been here 7 years now, and in Myrtle Beach, there's been a lot of really good places that are opening up, you know, either breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There's a couple of new breakfast places that have opened across the Grand Strand that are really raising the bar, you know, instead of serving the same old thing. So, you know, they're serving even different things that I'm serving, and maybe, you know, doing a little bit more upscale plating or an upscale atmosphere where I'm more like family dining, where, you know, another place opened up on 82nd Avenue called Drift, and they're Drift Coastal Dining, I think it's called. And I went there to eat, and they have like their own twist on breakfast. And I thought that was a really awesome place. I thought the food was good and everything. And it was a nice family that owns it. So it's just nice to see. And even for dinner, I've been to a couple of really nice places doing farm to table out in Conway. Last night I went to Crooked Oak Tavern in Conway, and I was so happy when I left. I ate so much. It was ridiculous. And just, you know, I just want people to understand that South Carolina has really good food, really good barbecue, good breakfast, lunch, you know, fine dining places, not so fine dining places, but they're still delicious. So everyone needs to come here ready to eat, bring your appetites, and don't worry about their diets anymore. And they go home and worry about that stuff. But we are open here, and last year was rough during shutdown. We missed all the spring break, and it was really hard for me to see my restaurant dead every single day. I mean, we were down like 93% in April, 97.3% in April. It was pretty sad.
Wow.
So when we opened back up again, we did more, And on Easter weekend than we did all of it last April. It was wow. Very hard for me. And it took me a few months to recover from that. Cause when you see your restaurant just dead every single day, dead empty, that really takes a toll on your brain. And even though it was only temporary and I knew it was temporary, it was really a struggle last year. It took me a little while to recover from what happened last year. And then, you know, people came after that in like drones because we were one of the only states opened. So now I feel like although spring break was super packed, you know, there are other places to go, but I want people to come here obviously and really enjoy what South Carolina has to offer, because even like the beautiful parks and the waterfalls, like I went out to Greenville for Euphoria and I loved it. And then I went back a month later for my birthday and we went to Table Rock Park. We spent a whole day in up Falls by the Reedy and just, you know, ride bikes and hang out by the water and stuff. It's just such a beautiful state. And you just have, there's just so much to offer. Like you don't have to come to Myrtle Beach and Charleston. You can go to Greenville. You can go, you know, get a cabin at Table Rocker. And there's just so many things to do and so beautiful. So whether you like the beach or whether you like nature or whether you just want to stuff your face with food, I feel like South Carolina offers all of that. And you can really get all of it really in one trip. Like you can come to Myrtle Beach. You can come to South Carolina for a week and come to Myrtle Beach for a few days and then head out to Greenville or some of the other national parks that we have, you know, closer and enjoy, you know, both things. So I think that's really awesome because not everywhere you can do that.
Totally. Kevin, what about you? What do you hope people come to visit South Carolina and what do they leave with?
Well, I think the first thing is I want people when they come to South Carolina, specifically places like Myrtle Beach and Charleston, the heavy tourist areas in the state, which are very beautiful, as Jamie said, and there's a lot of things to do, even outside of food. But I want people when they come to places like that, first of all, they have to understand that we are still kind of recovering from the pandemic. And there's a lot of places here in Charleston and definitely there in a, you know, and I'm sure Jamie can attest to that, you know, there's a lot of these places that are extremely, extremely understaffed and they're trying to staff up. And I think I just want people when they come, you know, initially until we kind of get some sense of normalcy, whatever that is supposed to be, that they walk away with the understanding that, you know, this despite the short staff, that people are still in those places ready to serve you, ready to give you the best experience that they can possibly give you, even though they're understaffed. And you know, I've seen cases where people come into a place and they leave upset because they may have not had the best experience, but they still have to base that on the fact that we are still recovering from the pandemic. And you know, I know Jamie and I was just talking to Rhonda the other night and I said to her, I wish that I was closer to her because I have, you know, access to students and I could send her students to help staff up her kitchen so she can, you know, offer the people that come to her places, you know, a great dining experience. And I've been to a couple of her places and I've had a really great experience. But they need to kind of walk away and understand that, hey, you know, you know, places, especially, you know, busy places like Jamie has and other places in the state are we're trying. And then also, of course, as Jamie said, I want people to walk away understanding that, you know, we have some really great food here, some really great products, really great produce, and we have really great chefs who are really on a mission. Even outside of the Chef Ambassador program, chefs are on a mission to offer their diners locally grown produce or meat or, you know, locally cultivated or fished seafood, so on and so forth. And just get out there and you know, open your mind and get out there and try a lot of these places that are opening up. And I mean, even in Charleston, as Jamie said, there are restaurants opening up like every day, even in the midst of the recovering pandemic. I mean, you know, Vivian Howard from North Carolina is opening up a restaurant tomorrow. And, you know, my email is being inundated by so many chefs in the city who are starving for students, you know, for workers. And, you know, that there's so many, there's more jobs available than we have people to fill those positions. So, and it just goes back to saying, you know, just be patient and, you know, things will kind of get back to, once again, that whatever the normal is going to be in 2021 or 2022. But
right.
Definitely walk away knowing that, you know, wherever you go, whether it's, you know, it's Jamie's place, or even if, you know, you come to the culinary school, and, you know, when we're actually hoping to open up our public restaurants pretty soon to offer diners, you know, some really great products from the state.
That's awesome. And I think, Kevin, that is great advice, I think, for any state, any city, anywhere that you are going after you get vaccinated and start to venture back out to restaurants and eating inside, that everyone should be patient and gracious. Whether you work in the restaurants or you're dining at the restaurants, it's going to definitely take some time for us all to get back to the new normal. So thank you for sharing that thought. Yep. I think that's really, really great. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. This has been the second part of our two happy hours with the South Carolina Chef Ambassadors. And yeah, to Kevin's point, they're two-year terms for these guys. And so thank you all for, you know, representing the state and taking the time to talk to us about what makes South Carolina such an incredible food destination.
Absolutely.
Can't wait to see you eat with you soon.
Thank you.
Yeah. And last thing I want to say is that, you know, 2021, we did not get to celebrate Charleston Wine and Food in person, but we do know the dates for next year. And we are really looking forward to seeing all of our chef friends and our food community in Charleston next year. Mark your calendars now. Those dates are March 2nd through 6th, 2022. And that is just a wonderful thing to look forward to. So Jamie, yes. Kevin, we'll see you there.
Yes.
Yeah. So I can't wait.
Yes, and definitely. And the way I think things are going, you know, the festival is going to be even better than before. I think having this time off has allowed for the festival to kind of regroup and really change the way they do things. And I'm hoping actually to be the chef chair for the 2022 festival. So it's going to be great. I mean, I'm going to have a lot of stuff going on, but, you know, still hoping to at least, you know, that'll probably be one of our last events as chef ambassadors, and, you know, to pass the baton on to the new class. But we're so looking forward to having people come back to Charleston for the festival.
I cannot wait to see you there.
All right. Well, thanks again, everybody. I'm Kat Johnson. Thanks to Katie Mosman-Wadler for being my co-host, as always. And we will be back in a few weeks with more HR and Happy Hour. So tune in soon.
Thanks, everybody. See you next
time.
Thank
you. Take care. Bye.
HR and Happy Hour is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.